Jenna, Gail Choir. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming out on this Memorial Day weekend. It's good to see everyone. This is the third talk that I have in a series that I am calling the Honoring Series, and it's based on this book by Jan LaVant-Sant. It's called One Day My Soul Just Opened Up, and it's a powerful book. It's has 40 different days if you follow the instructions in the book that sort of coach you and bring you along to an expanded awareness of what you can be. Before I get into this, though, I'm going to be out of order here, but I guess that's the way it's going to be. I want to take just a moment to mention Memorial Day tomorrow, and I urge everyone to take a moment tomorrow to honor those that have made the ultimate sacrifice so that we are free here today to meet. There are so many places in this world where if you're a Christian, you're persecuted. If you're another religion, you're persecuted. And yet, in our magnificent country, due largely to the sacrifices of many, many people, we're free to meet here just as we are. And I think it's appropriate that we do remember those. The first week in the honoring series was honoring the divine. And I talked about how sometimes our experience is like the divine has given us a full box of 64 crayons, and sometimes we only use a few. And I think last week or the week before I mentioned that, you know, we're not really expressing the divine unless we use all 64. David pointed out that that's absolutely not the case, because we can express the divine with one crayon. But I think it's wise to remember that maybe we do have all 64, and it's good to remember that we do have a full tool basket. We also learned that week to roar, and that was a lot of fun. Week two, we talked about honoring ourselves and how we ourselves, along with the divine creative force of the universe, are co-creating our experience that we have here today. And if we want to change that experience, we can do that by changing how we think and how we feel. We also got a little insight into Mrs. Fleming's wildest dreams. And then part of honoring ourselves, we also realize that part of that honoring ourselves is taking care of our physical plant. And so I made a commitment that I was going to start doing a better job of taking care of myself. And one of the things that I'm going to do is to join the Spiritual Striders group. And I posted my weight up there, and each week we're going to track that, and we'll see how I do. And I invite anyone who wants to participate in this with me to just send me whatever it is, and I'm not going to name any names or anything, but I'll just take a collective weight loss that we have for our center over these 12 weeks. So I think Mrs. Fleming may even made a slide. I'm not sure. Okay. So as of yesterday, I'm down 2 pounds. So I lost 2 pounds the first week. The title of my talk today is Honoring Others. Now, I'm talking about those that are close to us. That's our family, our friends, our coworkers, you know, our spiritual community here. I'm not including the entire populace of the globe. That comes later in the series. But honoring others are those that are closest to us today. And my 3 points, we're talking about honoring others with compassion, honoring others with forgiveness, and honoring others with service. honoring others with compassion. What do we mean by that? By compassion, I'm talking about someone who is willing to give freely of themselves with no expectation of receiving anything back in any way. And in the book, Ayana Van Sant says, a truly compassionate person is one who can feel what you feel because they are one with you in mind, body, and spirit, not out of obligation or a false sense of responsibility. She goes on to say, a compassionate person does not join in the victim mentality of blaming others. Instead, they will stand strong with you, supporting you through the acceptance of the situation. The compassionate person knows with you, for you, and when necessary, in spite of you, that all things work together for your good. A corollary to this point of honoring others with compassion is that of setting boundaries. And yes, it's good that we do things for other people and we help other people. But when do you let go and allow other people to figure things out for themselves? If you keep doing for people what they must learn to do for themselves, they will never learn to do it. And this does not honor other people, and it does not honor you. Van Sant also says, when you don't have boundaries in your life, people will inject themselves into places in your life where you do not want them, and they have no business being. So it's important that we do set boundaries in our lives. And we can do that with the spiritual compass that we are all given. And it's when we set those boundaries and we don't let people into that part of us that we can continue to give. We can only give so much. And if we give without any boundaries, we soon deplete. And then is when we fall into that sense of giving out of obligation or how we think we should be doing. Our children today are studying about Solomon. This month they are studying the great philosophers. And today they are studying about Solomon. And Solomon was regarded as perhaps the wisest man ever. He is honored throughout the Abrahamic tradition. He's honored in the Hebrew scriptures. He's honored by Christians. He's honored by Muslims for his wisdom. And he taught a story of compassion by showing no compassion. Mrs. Fleming took this out of the kids' lesson because it's a little tough. But it's a story of two women. They both had new babies. And there was a raid. There was a war. There was a conflict. And the women were separated from their babies. And they went to go retrieve their babies, and there was only one baby. And both women claimed this baby. So the people didn't know what to do, so they took the two women and the baby to Solomon and asked him what to do. And he asked the first woman if this was her baby. And she said, of course, I know that it's my baby. I carried it for 9 months, and I can feel its very heartbeat within me. I said, you really sound like the mother. So he asked the second one, is this baby yours? And she said, absolutely. I also carried this baby for 9 months, and I can feel its rhythms. I've nursed it. I know what this baby is. I know that it's mine. And Solomon said, well, wow, you really sound like it. You know, you're its mother also. Well, I guess the only thing we can do, we'll just cut the baby in half and give half to each of you. And the first woman said, well, that's ridiculous. Then neither of us have the baby. You're no wise man. That's foolish. But the second woman said, Well, if that's your decision, then I'll give up the baby. Because I would rather have that baby go with someone else than to be killed. And it was her compassion for that baby that allowed Solomon to give it to the second woman. Compassion. The second point is honoring others with forgiveness. When you forgive, you're really doing something for yourself. Van Sant says, when you cannot move beyond memories of what someone else has done to you, and those memories keep you hurt, angry, or any way limited in life, it is time to forgive. When the only thing you remember about someone is that what they did to you and not the fact that they are a human being prone to make mistakes, it is time to forgive. If you don't like yourself, it is time to forgive. If you are overweight, underweight, out of cash, in a bad relationship, working in an unfulfilling career, have corns on your little toes, a cold or a toothache, there is somebody somewhere you need to forgive. Start with yourself. And she makes a point in there that I think is really, really good. We all make mistakes. Every one of us. She goes on, if we did not make mistakes, we would not learn what works and what does not work. Each time we make a mistake, we are provided with an opportunity to be corrected. The divine spirit of life is self-correcting. It will show us our mistakes through mental unrest and emotional dissatisfaction. That's exactly what Ernest Holmes has taught us. It's exactly what he says. We are not punished for our mistakes. We're punished by our mistakes. The law is going to respond no matter what. And when we make a mistake, we're going to get an immediate correction. The next point under forgiveness is this idea of non-judgment. People who do horrible things, and I'm talking about the Hitlers, the Boko Haram, all of the things that we see that are so terrible that are going on in the world today, the people who do those terrible things are generally doing them out of fear, shame, or guilt. And I guess my question is it wrong to be afraid or ashamed or to feel guilty? Or are we demonstrating conditional love? I will only love you if you behave this way. We think that some of the atrocities that are being perpetrated today are horrible. But not that long ago, they were standard practice. Ethnic cleansing. And we saw that in Bosnia, Herzegovina, and yet, not even 1,000 years ago, that was a common practice. When one army would invade the other one, they'd kill the men and fertilize the women to change the genetic pool. One phrase from the Christian Bible is repeated frequently when it comes to judgment. Judge not lest ye be judged. Comes from the book of Matthew, verse 1. Judge not lest ye be judged. And like so many other parts of the gospel, it's really important that we look at the entire passage and not just one verse. Because if we go on to look at the rest of that passage, verse 2, after chapter 7 says, "For with the same judgment that you judge, you will be judged, and with the same measure with which you measure, it will be measured to you." Why do you see the splinter which is in your brother's eye and do not feel the beam which is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, "Let me take out the splinter from your eye, and behold, there is a beam in your own eye"? O hypocrites, first take out the beam from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to get out the splinter from your brother's eye. What Jesus is saying in there isn't don't judge. He's saying don't judge from a standpoint of self-righteousness. Don't be a hypocrite. Don't judge someone for doing the same things that you do. I always like to refer back to the scholars of the Jesus Seminar to see what their comments were on portions of the scriptures that excite me, that make me think, that make me go a little deeper. And what they wrote about the first five verses of the seventh chapter in Matthew is very interesting. That first piece, judge not lest ye be judged, is in black. They felt that it's not very likely that Jesus ever said that. The second verse, that part about measuring and the same judgment that you judge will be judged by, they rated that as kind of marginal. We don't think he said that. He might have, but that's kind of marginal. But they were in almost unanimous agreement that Jesus said that part about taking the beam out of your own eye before you take the splinter out of your brother's. What Jesus was talking about was hypocrisy, not judgment. The Jesus Seminar said about this, this is verses 3 through 5, "Vivid, exaggerated, and humorous images are used in this set of sayings to call attention to the irony of fault-finding. The gist is that critics should concentrate on correcting themselves. And this coheres with Jesus' admonition to love enemies, forgive others, and imitate divine tolerance." And with that, they voted almost unanimously that Jesus said this or something very, very much like it. So I think that we can even take the words of the great teacher in regard to forgiveness, that maybe it's more important that we look what's in our own backyard first. Finally, we have honoring others with service. And I define service as giving of one's time, talents, and treasures without attachment or expectation of reward or recognition. And in this, it's what I say is do what brings you joy. That sounds good, but it can be pretty hard to do too. Many years ago, I had a man come to me who was very successful. He was a CPA. He was making six figures. He had a beautiful family. But his passion in life was working with young kids. That's what really excited him. And the reason that he came to me was to help make a decision to leave his six-figure job and go work, basically volunteer, with the Boys and Girls Clubs to teach basketball to disadvantaged youth after school. And just a few minutes spent with the man, you could tell that's what really ignited him. Now, I asked him about his day job, you know, his CPA job. He said, "Yeah, it's okay. It's, you know, it's not bad. It's it's numbers and crunching, and I kind of like that sort of stuff, and I like looking at those things and solving puzzles and things with finances, but what really lights me on fire is working with kids. We talked about what the sacrifices would be for him and his family to step away from this job, and I offered up something a little different. I said, would it be possible for you to go to your employer and see if you could maybe shift your hours a little bit? You could maybe start coming in at 7 instead of 9, or come in at 6 instead of 8, and take off at 3, and maybe get a slight reduction in salary. But it would still free you up to be able to be to the Boys and Girls Clubs by 3 in order to coach the kids. In other words, can you take this day job and use it to fund your passion? And that's what he ended up doing. He was able to shift his hours around. He was still able to be of service to the disadvantaged kids and coach basketball and maintain his job. And I think that that's the lesson in that for us, is that we don't have to quit our day job and go out and chain ourselves to an oil rig or whatever our passion happens to be. We can still have that passion and still work our day job. We can live, whether it's teaching disadvantaged kids, whether it's the environment, whatever it may be, we can do that as well. Thomas Edison said, if we did all of the things that we are capable of, we would astound ourselves. I have one last story. Was June 15th, 5:53 in the afternoon in Hartsville, Ohio. It's a suburb of Cincinnati. The security camera at a small pizza shop, Cosmic Pizza, recorded a man coming in, ordering a pizza. The guy that took the order happened to be the owner, and he backed off away from the counter and turned to a small woman behind him. He said something to her, and she gathered three little ones behind her. The video doesn't catch what happened next, but what happened is this man was a burglar, a robber, and he came around behind the counter and he shot this owner 3 times, and he took his life. The police came, and what they found surprised them. They began to interview this diminutive woman who had been protecting her 3 children. She had no driver's license. She did not know her address. She was intelligent. The kids were well kept. The kids were bright. In order to find their house, they had to use Google Earth, and she could tell them, turn right here, turn left there, and finally, there's our house. They went to the house. She had no keys. She never opened her own house. So they broke out a window and came in the back, set off the alarm. Didn't know how to disarm that. The woman had been born in Thailand and had met the owner of the pizza shop, her husband, years before, when he had gone to Thailand on a junket. As the story unfolded, it was almost unbelievable. This family had lived in almost total isolation. They asked the 8-year-old what grade he was in school, and he had no idea what they were even talking about. He had never been to school. And yet, she at home taught them. They were bilingual. They were well-read. Inside the house, they found a neatly typed to-do list on the refrigerator. The house was filled with industrial-sized supplies that he had bought to take to the restaurant the next day. But all she had done was raise the kids and cook. He took care of everything. The people passed the hat, the neighbors, and collected some money, and they brought her some money in an envelope. She had no idea what to do with it. She'd never been to a bank. She didn't know how to write a check. The neighbors came together, and they decided that they were going to help. One lady who had a background in banking and whatnot showed her how to write checks and how to keep track of the check register. Another lady who knew about immigration and whatnot checked to see if, you know, what her status, immigration status was, and it was not good. Come to find out that her husband had paid a significant amount of money to an attorney in San Francisco as soon as they came back from Thailand, and the attorney took all the money and left and didn't do anything, and she was there illegally. Another neighbor who was an attorney took the case pro bono and argued it and was able to get her a green card to be able to stay. I am only going over the very tip top of the things that happened for that family because of the neighbors. And these are people that had never even met this woman. They did not know her. The family stayed together all the time. They woke up in the morning. They played with the kids. They went to the pizza shop. They worked all day. At night, they closed down the pizza shop. And sometimes they'd go out to the amusement park. Whatever they did it together as a family, and then they'd go home. She had no friends, no family. She had these neighbors that came together. And what they did is an example. They came together with no judgment of her. They came together with compassion for her. And they came together with forgiveness. Forgiveness for the husband for keeping her so isolated. Last year, on June 14th, they finally had a memorial. It was held outdoors at the cemetery where he had been buried. And I know that the people driving by wondered, what in the world is going on there? They had balloons. It was a celebration. It was a celebration of his life. But she has made so many strides. She's learned how to run the pizza parlor by herself. She's expanded the menu to include now some Thai food, which seems to be going over very, very well. But it's neighbors helping with compassion, with forgiveness, and they were of service. I'll leave with one final quote. And this is our takeaway, really. Do your little bit of good where you are. It's those little bits of good put together that overwhelm the world. Desmond Tutu said that. And so it's with this idea of service that we go into prayer. And I simply recognize the power and presence of God, here and now, knowing that that infinite intelligence of which I speak is indeed everywhere at every moment. That infinite intelligence, that divine creative power, is within each and every one of us. And so as we live and move and have our being on this plane at this time, we carry with us that spark of that infinite intelligence. We carry with us that divine creative power. And I know that the nature of that divine creative power is one of health. It is one of joy. It is one of abundance. It is one of love. And so I speak my word for each and every person this day that may be experiencing the appearance of dis-ease. I simply know that behind this appearance there is a divine pattern of perfection, a blueprint that is right, and it's that blueprint that is perfect that I call forth for each person that has the appearance of dis-ease. I also speak my word for each person that is experiencing lack and limitation, financial challenges. I just know that we live in an abundant universe. The number of stars in the heaven, the number of grains of sand on the beach, infinite, and that we are supplied. We will sleep this night in a safe, secure, warm, dry environment. We will be fed. We are safe and secure. And I speak my word for any person who is experiencing any type of relationship challenge, knowing that all of our relationships are based on God's love. And even though there is the appearance of conflict, the appearance of discord at our heart, at our core, we are beings of love. And it is that love, God's love, that I call forth in every work relationship, every family relationship, forgiveness and love. So now knowing that the words that I have just spoken are God's own truth, I just give thanks. I give thanks for the abundance in the world. I give thanks for the health. I give thanks for God's love. And I release these words to the working of law. I let it go and I let it be. And so it is.